We're having a special session tonight, making the most of your time at the Machon. And
we have this shiur before.
We have this class almost every semester, at least once a semester, and it never sounds the same. I never look at my notes from last time. So the first question we have to ask ourselves is, how much time do we have? One guy mentioned he's got 10 days, another guy has 2 weeks. That's why I always ask guys when they come, how much time are you here for? Now, when you realize how much time you have, so then you have to think, what do you want to get out of that time? One of the things that move me the most to get out here is the fact that I know most people aren't here more than a year. And that means that if we're not going to have a class on Behar B'chukosai, then I don't know when you'll ever hear a class on Behar B'chukosai, because chances are you won't be here the next time a cycle goes around. And I know there are guys that are here. But most of us don't make it to the second time around. So we have to think how to get the most of the time we're here. What do we want to get out of the time that we're here? So guys come to the Machon with unrealistic expectations. Like one guy told me, I thought half a year after I'm here, I'll be learning Gemara on my own. Okay, I it's nice to aspire to that, but it's unrealistic. The person doesn't know the language and he's got a whole lot of things to learn before he could learn a Daf Gemara. So you have to recognize what can you really get out of the time you have. And being that really this subject should be discussed on an individualistic basis, and we're not doing that, so we're going to have to use general guidelines, and each person is going to have to think how to apply them or speak to someone who's got experience. And I recommend, by the way, to talk to people who have experience. You could gain from speaking to someone who's at your stage of the game because they've just been through it, but they've been through it once. And someone who's been given classes here hopefully has been through it many, many times with many students, so hopefully they have more experience. But in general, it's usually better to speak to someone older, someone who's got a white beard, someone's got a long white beard. You know, it's not mine. Right, very good. So, what do we want to get out of our time? So I think one of the things that every person should want to get out of his time here is to connect. To connect to the Torah, to connect to the land of Israel. And that, everyone thinks that's synonymous with enjoying the learning, and it isn't necessarily synonymous. To connect with the Torah, each person is going to do it on his level and on his front. And some people connect only when they suffer. Some people connect with things when they have to give up for it. And we all, to an extent, connect that way. There is an aspect where every person, when you give up something for something, so the fact that you've given up in order to attain that goal, in and of itself connects you to that goal. But on which level and how to do it, that's very individualistic. How does one connect to the Torah? Well, learning it is a good start, but then the question is what to learn, how much time to spend learning what. But the general goal, I think one of the first general goals a person should have is to connect, to feel connected. We're not reading a history book, we're not reading a story, this isn't a bunch of old rabbis who had all kinds of discussions, and this isn't anything similar to any secular studies that exist. It's the way of life that God wants us to have. It's not just another ancient civilization that has a set of laws. And to connect to that, not just to say it, takes time. And here, there's another point which we could add, and that is connecting to Hashem. There's great potential when a person is in the land of Israel, and I'm sure many of you have experienced it already, and especially when a person takes time out in his life to analyze where he's headed and what he's doing with himself and study the Torah. So there's great potential to connect. And to connect can be through the Torah. It could also be through prayer. And it could be both. But we have to recognize that it's not just to connect to the Torah and to Israel, but it's also to connect to our Creator. And now the next thing, which sometimes is synonymous, but not always, is enjoying the learning. Our sages said, "En adam lomed ela bimkom sheribo chafetz." A person shouldn't learn. A person won't be as successful in his learning unless he's learning in a place that he wants to learn. And our sages understood that to mean that it doesn't mean, are you going to learn in the front of the Bet Midrash or the back of the Bet Midrash, in this room or that room, in this yeshiva or that yeshiva. It means the subject matter that you're studying. And every person has a certain inclination, certain things that his teva, his nature, is more attuned to. There's the famous story about Rav Yosef Karo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch. He wanted to learn Kabbalah, so he went to one of the great sages of Kabbalah, and he said, "I don't think it suits your nature. But try it, come to one of my classes." So he came, and he fell asleep. And he told him, "You see, this isn't for you." So each of us have certain things that we're more attracted to. Now that doesn't mean that a person could sit and read Midrash all day, can't read stories, but if a person feels like that's what he's going to connect to, then that definitely should take a part of his day. He should have that as part of his day. Our sages say that a person has to be well-rounded. It's not enough for a person only to learn Gemara or only Halacha or only Torah. Our sages say there also has to be Medrash. It's not enough to... Medrash is part of Torah. When I say Torah, I mean the Chumash, five books of Moses, Chamish Chumshei Torah. Our sages say that one of the great sources of Yirat Shamayim, what makes a person a God-fearing person, is learning the Midrashim, learning the stories that our sages have told us that connect to the Torah. So that's also something a person should be doing. Now, I'm not saying every person should be learning Medrash now. I'm just saying, to balance what I said, that one should not spend his whole day learning Medrash, even if that's what he feels he connects to. On the other hand, it is something which is perfectly legitimate a person should assign time to. And now we're going to deal with a more logical aspect of the learning, and that is, there are two things in your learning here at the Machon. One is laying the foundations for your future learning. So for that, it's worth investing the time to break your head over understanding Hebrew. Break your head over knowing how to read a Gemara, knowing how to read a Rashi. Again, assuming you have the time for it. But there's also learning the subject matter which will serve you in the future. Not only the tools. When you're learning Hebrew, so you're learning the tools to learn, to manage in Israeli society, but they're tools. They're tools that you'll use later. You should also set up your time in a way that you're also getting the knowledge that will serve you later. You want to run a Jewish home, you have to know how a Jewish home runs. So part of it is spending Shabbatot at people's homes and paying attention to what goes on here. And part of it is opening a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch so that when your roommate says, "You don't wear a kippah in the shower," you could tell him, "Yeah, I don't wear a kippah in the shower." And you don't start saying, maybe I should. When a person should learn and know what he's supposed to do. So if we'll recap what we said, how do we get the most out of what out of our time? We should know that our learning, we should set a time for learning or davening or whatever it is that's going to connect us to the Torah, to Israel, to Hashem. Enjoying the learning, setting up a time for learning what we enjoy, even though it won't necessarily serve us as far as building our foundations or our knowledge for the future, but that's important. And then we said, as far as the bulk of our learning, we have to learn what we need as foundations for future learning, the tools for our future learning, and learning also the information that's going to serve us in the future. Now, in everything in life, and learning is no different, when a person is organized, he's going to be more productive. And there's a direct correlation between how organized the person is and how productive his time is. People sometimes get carried away when they enter yeshiva. We're supposed to be learning all day. So then we don't take advantage of every minute. And instead of having the most productive year of our life, sometimes the time goes between our fingers. Slips out like sand. And you don't notice it, because this isn't college. It's not like you're going to be tested on the material at the end of the semester. No one's checking how much you're advancing. And there's no pressure. You don't show up to a class. So, you know, they'll ask you, or maybe they won't ask you. I don't know exactly how it works here, but there isn't that pressure like in college. which is a positive thing. But on the other hand, many people end up losing time because of that. And that's why it's recommended for people to set up a schedule. Very often people get lost because they don't have a set schedule and they don't know what they're supposed to be doing when. So when they have a free hour, the question is, okay, what do I do now? Do I go to the internet room? Do I go take a coffee break? Do I go to rest? Do I walk outside and smoke? What do I do? And the person should set up his schedule to include breaks. But when you have a schedule, then you know what you're supposed to be doing when. And in the schedule, you should also have the free time quantified. I'm not saying a person shouldn't have free time. Those of you who know me know that I'm a big fan of free time. I think it's very important. People are very productive when they have a proper amount of free time. But a person should quantify it. He should know how much time he's going to have free and how much time he's going to do things. And how much time he needs to take free. How much of a break does he need? Just because there's no class going for 3 hours during a night doesn't mean that a person can't take advantage of those 3 hours. Now, I'm not saying a person has to necessarily sit in the Beit Midrash and learn. You could take, Medrash says on the Parsha, read Midrashim. You're all going to be parents, God willing. I hope soon. Not so soon. You got to get married, 9 months. But Mirtz Hashem, it's in the not so distant future. You want to be able to tell your kids stories, not Cinderella. You want to be able to tell them the story of Avram that every child grows up on. And you want to be able to tell them and share with them our heritage, if you want to call it that, or our tradition. So learn it. Don't go by what you barely remember and the half stories you've heard. You should know it. Have a good version of it. Take a midrash, the midrashim in English, and read it. You'll enjoy it. You could read biographies of rabbis. I'm not a big fan of biographies. Usually they make it like at 5, he knew half a shas. At 10, he was answering everyone's questions. By 15, okay, the guy was an angel. And they don't tell you how many times they fell and how many times they didn't succeed. And then a person feels like, gee, when I was 5, I wasn't doing anything close to what he was doing, so I don't stand the chance. And I keep on having ups and downs. Well, everyone has ups and downs. There was no great rabbi who didn't have his downs. And that's why biographies sometimes aren't so good, because they're not true. Their point is to stress how great he was. Well, he was great because he overcame difficulties, not because he didn't have them. And that they don't tell you in biographies. But they still help. They still give us perspective. And history books. I mean, you should know the history of our people. I'm a big believer in making a schedule. And making a schedule doesn't only mean in theory, but if you're working with a laptop, it should be on your desktop. And it should be open. You should have a schedule. What am I doing during which times? And that schedule, before I was working with a computer, I used to always have a piece of paper that, in Israel, the pages have 30 lines, exactly 30 lines. I never counted, but I know because I'd always fill it in the beginning of the month. And it would last me, either it's 29 lines, or maybe I used the line on top, line on bottom, I don't remember. But it would always last me a month. And at the beginning of every month, I'd write down the days of the week, the days of the month, and then I'd draw lines. And I'd write, between this and this hour, I'm supposed to be learning Mishnah. This and this hour, Gemara, Bikiyut, can cover ground. This and this time, sleeping. This and this time, Gemara, Iyun. This and this time, Halacha. This and this time, Chavrusa, in Emunah. And I'd set it up. And every day, I'd have to fill out what I accomplished during that time. If I was on the phone with my mother for 2 hours during that time, so I'd write on the phone with mother. And I'd usually have a different color pen. And then at the end of the month, I could look at it and see, okay, what did I do? How much did I take advantage of my time? And how much was I just shooting the breeze? And this way, a person can move forward in time management. Usually, the next day, you'll already see, gee, yesterday I lost half a day sitting in the coffee room. If you don't write it down, you're not going to notice. You could be losing half days one after the other and you won't notice. Now, when you're setting up the schedule, there are two ways of setting up goals. A person could say, I want to learn X amount every day. A person could say, I'm going to learn 2 halachot in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch every day. Or a person could say, I'm going to learn an hour straight. And they both have their pluses and minuses. When a person sets a goal of covering a certain amount of ground, so then he doesn't get bogged down. On the other hand, you don't want to set a goal that'll cause you not to understand. Sometimes people are in a rush to meet their quotas, and then they don't understand what they're learning. There's no point in that. You have to understand. On the other hand, when people set up blocks of time, so sometimes they could end up talking to Chavruta and trying to verify one question for a half hour, and they don't move forward. So that's not good either. So you have to figure out which balance works better for you. When you decide what you want to accomplish, it's always better to underplan and succeed than to overplan and not succeed. Because when you don't live by your plans, then they're not worth much. If day after day you see you're not making your quota, so then eventually you don't treat it seriously. What?
Like the selfish union. The 5-year plan, something like that.
Oh. Okay. Now, we could take a microcosm of what we said in the beginning. You have your period at the machon. What do you want to get out of that time? You should also break it down to a day, to a week. What do I want to get out of today? What do I want to get out of the average day? What do I want to get out of this week? You begin the week. Look at the week. What do you want to get out of this week? And a person is going to learn how much time he needs for each thing. That's something which, in the beginning, you don't know so much. How much time can I focus on learning halacha? You might want to learn halacha for 2 hours straight and recognize that you can't focus on halacha 2 hours straight. You might recognize that you can't learn for more than 35 minutes without a break. Most people could focus between 35 and 45 minutes without taking a break. That's why I like keeping my classes up to 45 minutes. I find that once you hit that 35-minute break, you're losing people by 45 minutes. Everyone's fighting themselves to concentrate. When you reach a point where you have to fight to concentrate, then you're spending half your energy fighting, and then you're not getting as much out of the time. It's better to say, okay, what's the time now? Time now is 9:21. I'm going to take a 10-minute break. 9:31, I have to be here. Now I'm going to walk outside, jog, clear my head, put my head down, take a drink, whatever it is. I don't recommend going to the phone because it's rare that you go to the phone and get back on time. So you should have set times for using the phone. When you're setting up your schedule, so I do this myself every time the beginning of a semester. I sit down and I write down what times do I have. What times do I have available? And that changes at least every semester. It sometimes changes within the semester as well. What times do you have? Let's say you get up. So you know you want to get up at 6:30. You know you practically get up at 8:30. So now what times do you really have there? You have to be realistic. Don't set yourself up for failure. If you know you're not going to get up at 8:30, so you could decide. And that's something we'll discuss in a minute, that this is what I'm working on this semester. Getting up early. Getting up at a decent hour. But first thing you should do is set up what times do I have. I know if I get up at 8:30, that means I make it to the 9 o'clock minyan, which means I show up late to class. So theoretically, I could say I'm not going to do that. Practically, I'm probably, going to do that. So now let's decide how do I allocate my times. A person could say, this semester I'm working on getting up on time. That's one of my goals. And I strongly recommend you set up goals in becoming a better person. And a better person doesn't only mean bin adam l'chaviro, a person to his fellow man or a person to his creator, but also a person to himself. Some people could never say positive things about themselves. Some people are always apologizing. You didn't do anything wrong. What are you apologizing for? But that's the way of communicating with the world. A person should be at peace with himself, and then he'll be able to succeed with many other things. And people should take one, maximum two, in my opinion, maximum two things they're going to work on in a semester. If you know you're having trouble getting up on time, that's one of them. So you could take one more. I don't think you could handle three. I don't think anyone could handle three well. I think the average person could handle two. Now, there are always going to be smaller things a person works on. A person could decide, I'm going to get up on time and I won't curse. I'm going to get up on time and I won't yell. I'm going to get up on time and something else. I'll speak respectfully to my parents. Whatever it is, but it's enough. Better, again, to underplan and succeed than to overplan and fail. So we decide how much time we have. That's one piece of paper. You take another piece of paper and you write down, now what do I want to accomplish? And then you look at your times and you compare, because all too often we know what do I want to accomplish and we don't really think about the times we have. And being male, as we discussed in the beginning of the week, we think we could do everything. So one day we learn a little medrash, the next day we learn a little halacha, and at the end of the week we feel like, yeah, I did a little of this, I did a little of that. What do we have at the end of the semester? We have a chont. We didn't really finish one specific thing. And it's better to finish things. So a person could say, I have a set time, which is my chulin time. A lot of people do that. People sometimes say Motzei Shabbat is a time when you can't really get a charusa usually. It's not so productive by most people. They end up going to the movies or something else. So Motzei Shabbat, that's my chulin time. I go and investigate things. I look at books that I never looked at before. I do free-for-all or things that interest me. A person could and probably should set up a time where he just expands his horizons. But during most of the week, a person should have set things and he should accomplish. And he should know what he wants to accomplish. He could say, I want to finish half the book. Okay, when you finish half the book, mark it. And get used to, in my opinion, a person should get used to writing in his books. Most of the books aren't going to last 100 years anyways. So write in them. It could even mean you write inside the flap of the cover. You write, I reached this and this page on this and this date. I accomplished this much. And when you want to come back to that book, it's not a bookmark that fell out as you were cleaning and moving, etc. I'm a believer in writing in books. I know it's not conventional, but I think it pays. There are books which you're going to use year after year after year, like a chumash. So then you have to decide. If you have a very expensive set, you don't want the translation words that you were working with this year to get in your way next year. So you could say, well, yeah, I don't believe that next year I'm going to be that much more advanced. I'm going to need them. So, for example, I have Chumashim where I wrote the French words of Rashi. I don't believe I'll be speaking French next year or the year following that. So I'm always going to need a translation of Rashi's French words. But I have Gemaras which I used in ninth grade where I would translate words which today it's annoying for me to read. And I'd underline psukim, which today I know the psukim, so I don't need that underlining, and it's just annoying to read that Gemara. So you have to, that's the one thing to factor. When you're writing in a sefer, you have to remember that hopefully you're going to advance, and then 2, 3, 4 years down the road, it might be annoying to see all these footnotes. But today, books aren't that expensive, especially if you're living in Israel. And what I sometimes do is I buy a used sefer so that I could write in it. If I have a set of shas, and I want to write in my Gemara, so either I'll photocopy that page. Now we just had in Psachim a bunch of pages which were Agat the Gemara. I couldn't translate all the words there. There were a lot of words that I didn't know. So I photocopy. I write down all the English or Hebrew, however I'll translate. And then I could go over that with the translation 2 or 3 times. And then next time I reach that page, I'll know most of it. So that's a compromise. But I don't think there's anything wrong with writing in books. Worst comes to worst, writing pencil. Pencil, by the way, has a plus and a minus. The plus in pencil is that when it gets wet, it doesn't disappear. The minus is that it smudges. Pen doesn't smudge as much, but when it gets wet, you sometimes lose everything you wrote. Okay, so back to setting up a schedule. We said writing what times we have, and then deciding what things we want to accomplish this year, and then allocating it. And you'll be surprised that you can't fit in as much as you really want to. And if you're going to fit in, then you're going to have to do less of each thing, if you're going to fit in more topics, which isn't terrible. It's very good to switch topics, because it helps focus. If you learn the same thing, you learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, for an hour straight, you're probably going to have a harder time focusing than if you do 35 minutes of Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and 25 minutes of Medrash or 25 minutes of Parsha. In your schedules, I think you should include time to make phone calls, time for breaks, time to read books. If you do sports, time to do sports. If you're going to date, so then factor that in. Don't assume you're going to have every evening free. Make your schedule in a way that you know you're going to lose one evening a week, let's say. If you're going to be making phone calls to verify about the girl, and that'll cost you an evening, so factor in 2 evenings a week. If you see that you're only dating once every 3 months, so then maybe you don't have to factor it in as much. You'll see. But do factor in realistic things that are going to come up. Now we hit the question of chavruta. The pluses and minuses of learning with a chavruta as opposed to learning alone. So there are many pluses to learning with a chavruta. Firstly, practically, if you have a chavruta, then you know you have to end this phone conversation and go learn. If you don't, things could just get carried away. You're at the Kotel, you're having a good time. Okay, so today I won't be there, afternoon Seder. You have a chavruta who's going to be upset, and you know it's not right, then you feel more obligated to be there. So the first thing, which is a practical aspect, you have a chavruta, you have to be there. I sometimes set up chavrutot for the beginning times. Meaning I know I want to be in yeshiva, let's say, at 8:30. So I set up a chavruta for 8:30. That chavruta runs 8:30 to 8:45, 15 minutes. But once I'm there, I'm not walking away. I'll keep learning. So if all you're going to gain by having this chavruta is just that you start the learning process, then you could set up a chavruta for 10 minutes. For 10 minutes, you sit down, you learn something. Now, once you're in the Beit Midrash, you'll keep learning. But there are many other assets that one gains when one learns with a chavruta. A chavruta helps us think things through. When you speak the chavruta, you bounce things off someone. You think it through better. A chavruta helps us hear ourselves and hear someone else's opinion. So on both fronts, we gain. And then if the chavruta is on a higher level than we are, he knows more than we do, so we gain because he has more to impart. If he's on a lower level than we are, so we gain because we have to explain it to someone, and that automatically causes us to understand the material better. And sometimes it's better to look for a chavruta who knows less than you, if that's what you need. There are many people who succeed because they have chavruta to know less than them, so they're constantly explaining the material, so that forces them to understand it well. When you learn the chavruta, sometimes you could just read and not notice that you're not understanding. So that's a downside. Chavruta helps us focus, whereas when one learns alone, it's very easy for the mind to drift. On the other hand, chavruta could be limiting. You want to go at a quicker pace than he can, or than he wants to. I think that it's important to have chavruta during the day. It develops our learning. On the other hand, I think people have to have time to themselves. And each person has to see how much time he needs. But a person needs time to do his own learning. A person needs time to do his own reflecting. A person needs time where he feels like he could learn on his own. Now, there's a concept of biorhythms. Every person has times during the day when he's stronger and weaker, when he could focus more or less. And sometimes these rhythms span a day, half a day, 2 days. There's a rhythm to our focusing patterns. Many people, after they eat breakfast, have a lot of strength. Then they could tackle everything. Many people, after they eat breakfast, they're tired. Their digestive system weakens them. They can't focus as well. They need an hour before they could get into things. Everything's legitimate, but a person should pay attention to when his focus is peak and when his focus is less, and assign his learning to the times that match. Meaning, if there's a time when a person knows he's usually tired, so either he should nap or he should learn something which will catch his attention, which doesn't require as much intense concentration. You read Medrash. The Gemara says that there are signs of tiredness. The Gemara says when one holds his head, that's a sign of tiredness. So there are two opinions in the Gemara. Is it holding your head that causes you to be tired? Or is that when you're tired, you're holding your head? But at any rate, pay attention. You'll see there are times when everyone's holding their heads, or when you're holding your head. So decide, based upon the times you have, as much control as you have, divide your learning according to the focus ability you have during those times. A lot of the time when one learns outside of a class is spent breaking one's teeth trying to understand the Hebrew or the Aramaic. And the question is, how much does that pay? So, to an extent, at some point you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to figure out how to break down the word and what is the root of the word and what does this word mean? And that's why you guys are spending a lot of time in Ulpan, and that's a tremendous investment. But because we said one of the things you also want to get out of your time at the Machon is the knowledge, not just the tools, so you have to think how to balance that. If you're going to be here a year, and you're going to spend that year trying to figure out how to break down the words and read a line of Gemara, Well, if all you're going to have is a year, then you're going to walk out knowing how to learn a piece of Gemara better, but you still won't have acquired enough tools to learn on your own. And then it's a pity that you wouldn't have taken a good percentage of that time to develop the knowledge you need, not just the tools you need. The tools you'll be developing with time. If you're going to have the time here to develop the tools fully, that's the best, that's the ideal. But at the same time, you also have to have a knowledge base. And that's why we, I don't know if you noticed that the classes here at the Machon are really divided that way. Almost every class other than mine focuses on giving you tools. And I focus on uncovering ground, on giving you the knowledge. I don't spend a lot of time giving you the tools. Now, one of the tools is knowledge itself. It is a tool in and of itself. The more you know, the more you have. That in and of itself is a tool to tackling the Gemara and the Chumash. But we don't focus here on developing the tools, and almost every other class does. So, because you see this is the angle I'm always pushing, I'll push it on one more front, and that is that I think there's what to be gained by learning from English versions of things. A guy told me he finished a Masechet, and then he says, yeah, but it was only art scroll. And I was floored. What do you mean it was only art scroll? You're making a seam. You finished the whole Masechet. That's a big deal. I was very excited. I was more excited than he was. That's a very big deal. So what do I care if you used art scroll? So next time you'll use it less. But I think that if you're going to be using English versions, so again, you have to decide. Do you want to cover the ground and gain more information? So then just read through. Read. Cover ground. Gain knowledge. What you might choose to do, and this is how you'll gain a lot from using art scroll, is saying the first 45 minutes, I cover ground. I take a break for 10 minutes, and then I take 20 minutes developing my skills. The next 20 minutes, I either review what I've learned or learn new material, but every time after I finish reading with the English, I have to stop and reread it without the English. And that'll help you develop the tools on how to read the Gemara, because then you have to match the words. Okay, what did this word mean? What did that word mean? And if you know you're going to have to do that, then you'll pay closer attention as you're learning to what each word means. Now we hit a topic that no one likes. The Gemara already says in the Gemara's time no one liked it. And that is review, review, review. No one likes reviewing. It's not as intellectually stimulating as learning new material. New material is interesting, and reviewing, well, I know what I read. So first of all, you don't know what you read. Rashi was written in a level that 5-year-old could understand it, and a 50-year-old could gain from it. Everything you learn has levels of depth. In Torah, everything has depth. And if you read it again, and you have the patience to focus on rereading it, then you're going to discover new depth. I've been learning the Parsha every year for many, many years. It's never the same Parsha. There's a famous story about the woman who never went to shul, and then one year she comes to shul, and she asked the woman next to her, tell me, what are they reading down there in that scroll? So she says, that's the Torah. Oh, that's the Torah? What are they reading about? So she says, oh, there's this story about Yaakov, he had 12 sons, and there was enmity between one brother and the other 11, and then at one point he showed up, and they threw him in a pit, and they tore his clothing, and they sold him down to Egypt. And then the poor kid became a slave in a foreign land. He didn't know the language. And then they made up these stories about him, that he did something with his master's wife. And this woman is listening to the story. She's enthralled. And tears are running down her cheeks. And she says, this is what they did to the poor kid. He's away from his father. He was orphaned at a young age. And she's hearing the whole story. Finally, he becomes king. And she goes home. Fine. She had her experience that year. A year passes, and again she comes to shul. Again she sits down, happens to be the same parsha. So she asks the woman sitting next to her, tell me, what are they reading about? So she says, ooh, the story, I'll tell you. And she starts telling him the story of Yosef and the brothers. And she's listening and listening and listening. And then she finishes the story, and she doesn't react. So she says, I don't understand. Last year, it brought you to tears. This year, you don't react, nothing. The kid doesn't deserve a thing. What happened? So she said, look, last year, I really felt bad for him. But if he was dumb enough to do it again this year, then I don't feel bad for him. If when we read the Parsha, we're reading about Yosef doing it again this year, then there's something wrong. If we're reading about the same Yosef, and it's the same Parsha, and it's the same 11 brothers, and he's doing it again this year, it's wrong. Every time we learn the Torah, we should be different people, and the Torah should speak to us differently. If we're on the same level, then there's a problem with us. We should be advancing, and if we're advancing, then when we read it, we should have better understanding in the Torah. It always saddens me when people say, oh, Bereishis, I learned that many years ago. There was once they brought a guy to support a yeshiva. So he walks into the Beis Medrash and he asks the guy, what you're learning? So he says, Vayikra. He says, Vayikra? In fifth grade I learned Vayikra. You're learning Vayikra? You're already a 25-year-old man. What are you doing learning Vayikra? It's very sad if he remains with the understanding of a fifth grader of Vayikra, then there's a problem. He doesn't even appreciate what he's missing. And the same thing is true for all of us. The review is not supposed to be rereading the same material. It's true, it's the same material you're reading, but you should be a different person. And even if you just read the Gemara and you're reading it a second time, well, this time you have a better understanding of what you're going to read. So you're supposed to have a deeper understanding of what you read. The more you learn, the more depth you'll gain. What do we get bogged down on in our learning? So, in the beginning, it's difficult to know what are good questions and what are silly questions. I don't believe in getting bogged down on translating words. You should learn how to find the root of the word, and you should learn what each word means. But to sit down and spend 20 minutes figuring out what a word means, what's the point? You should spend a few seconds, think about it, try to understand it, ask your chavruta if he understands it, back and forth. You figured it out good, you didn't, look it up in an art scroll, in a dictionary, I don't care. Whatever's quicker. But what are you going to gain with spending more time? You could spend 5 seconds, 10 seconds, but to spend 2 minutes on it, what are you going to get? So, sit down, focus, you're looking puzzled. What's wrong? Focus, try to understand, try to break it down. You need a few more seconds. Take a few more seconds. But I don't see what there is. Maybe I'm missing something, but I don't see. If you guys disagree with me, tell me. I don't see why people spend a lot of time. And people, the same thing is true with facts. Sometimes you say, well, does this Gemara mean that you could also not do this or that you should also do the following? So you can mention it, good. But remember, you don't know. So you don't know, people sometimes start hypothesizing. And then their hypotheses take them to long distances. And they remember those hypotheses, and they don't remember that they were never written in the Gemara. So you could hypothesize to a limit, but don't spend your time hypothesizing. Well, you don't know, you learn more, you'll know.
Rob,
yeah.
This is Gemara, right? In Halakha, I think we do it, we get off on if this was this way, this was this way, because we like to cover possibilities from the law.
Yeah,
in
halacha. So the question is, what are you doing? Meaning,
possibilities of the law.
You can discuss possibilities of the law if you're going to have true answers to it, or if it's going to give you a better understanding of the law. But if it's just an exercise in trying to figure out what would be, well, I don't know what would be, and what would be, well, I don't know what would be there either. So let's try a third scenario. Well, I don't know that one either.
You say be practical.
Right, yeah. To utilize the time practically. If you're in a class and you have interesting scenarios, if that's the form of the class, then why not? But when you're learning on your own or learning with someone, so on the one hand, it's very good to apply what you're learning. Think of practical applications, 100%. That's how you're going to connect with your learning. If you just read a halakha, you wake up in the morning, you should wash your hands. You're not supposed to touch food, you're not supposed to touch your eyes. So then you should think to yourself, wait a second, but what happens if I wake up and I see my chocolate bar fell on the floor. If I don't pick that up now, then all my roommates are going to step on it.
Is that my chocolate bar?
So to take a second or two to give practical applications is very good. That'll connect you with your learning. I'm talking about going beyond that. I'm talking about you could sometimes sit next to guys in the Beit Midrash and you hear most of their learning is spent hypothesizing. I don't think that's right. I don't think they're gaining anything. They're enjoying hearing themselves talk. What's the point?
So
could he pick up the chocolate bar?
It depends. It was a Tuesday on the following.
think one of the things that every person should have, should gain, we'll have a class for open session, remind me, we'll get to that. Every person should try to get, and it doesn't have to be in the machon, but every person should have a rabbi he connects with. Rabbi you feel you could go to, you could speak to, who you feel you could look up to. That sounds funny, but it's true. Our sages say that King Solomon had a rabbi who he ultimately gave him the death penalty when he was king. But that was his rabbi. And until he gave that teacher the death penalty, he didn't intermarry. After he gave him the death penalty, he did intermarry. Because when a person has a rabbi that he feels a certain awe of, then that in and of itself keeps him in line to a certain degree. So long as he's close enough to that rabbi. And it's important to have that rabbi close enough that he'll see what you're doing. Now, I'm a big believer in freedom. You guys, I think you've sensed that already. But we all need a certain element of someone who we'd be embarrassed to do certain things in front of. Yeah. Okay. Smile. Smile is very important.
Smile at me? Smile,
smile is very, very important. And you should check yourself. How much are you smiling? If you're not smiling enough, so it could be you're just not a smiley person. So work on that. You should be. It'll help you. But it could be you're not enjoying yourself. And then you should ask yourself, what's wrong? Now, no one's promising you that learning is always going to be enjoyable, or that it's going to be easy, or that doing tshuva is going to be easy for that matter. It's not. And it's a bundle that comes with many, many, many hardships and many downs. Ups, but many downs. And remember that whenever you climb steps, in order to move one step higher, you always have to put your foot down. There's an aspect where to move forward, you also have to go down. Our sages said that a person does not acquire the Torah unless he stumbles in the Torah. There's no such thing as a person who acquires Torah by just, oh, he opens the Gemara and everything flows. And he wakes up in the morning and he always wakes up on time. He always makes it to davening. He always does what he's supposed to do. No such thing. A person does not acquire unless he stumbles. And we have to be prepared for that. But at the same time, we should check ourselves. Why am I not smiling? Maybe I have to change something in my schedule. A person should take time to ask himself what's going on. And on one level, a person should ask himself at the end of the day, how was today? And on another level, on a deeper level, a person should ask himself at the end of the week, you hit Friday, what'd you accomplish this week? And the same thing is true at the end of a month. Every Rosh Chodesh should stop and ask yourself, how was this month? And at the end of the year, for sure, am I advancing? Am I not advancing? How much? What am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? And for these things, it's very good to have a chart. Now, here we could go back to something we discussed, and that is the point of review. There are different types of reviews. Reviewing what you learn just after you learn it is worth a lot. It's very difficult. You break your head trying to understand the Gemara. You just finished it. The first thing you want to do is give your mind a break. Well, Rabbi Feinstein told us this when I was in his class. He said, you should know that one of the most worthwhile reviews you could have is directly following your learning, sitting down and reviewing what you've learned. Right after you finished it. You finish a class, right then, if you stop and review it, you're going to make an imprint in your brain, in your mind, that you can't do at any other time. Then there's a review which a person could do at the end of the day. And at the end of the week, if guys could take out time on Fridays to review what they've learned. And then at the end of the month, it's very worthwhile to factor in time at the end of each month. You could go by the Jewish calendar, by the non-Jewish calendar, but factor in time to stop and look over what you've learned. And there are different levels of review. There's a review where you relearn what you've learned, and it'll just go quicker. And there's a review where you skim read. And even that skimming is worth a lot. If you'll skim what you've done the last week, believe me, you'll run it through in your mind, you'll remember a lot of it. If you don't skim it, if you don't take that half hour on Shabbos, on Matzah Shabbos, on Friday, then at the end of the year, you'll have forgotten almost everything you've done in the beginning of the year. And that's how it goes. You just go one year after another, forgetting everything. There's a joke in the end of the Gemara, so they print a certain thing that you should say. There's a hadron. You ask about that, you want to come back to the Gemara. You tell the Gemara, I just finished you and I hope to come back to you. I won't forget you. You don't forget me, you tell the Gemara. And then we say a list of names. And that's a segula that's supposed to help a person regarding forgetting. So the way it says it in Hebrew is segula l'shikcha. It's a segula, it's like an amulet, it's going to help a person for forgetting. What it means is to prevent forgetting. So the joke goes, you learn one daf, so you know that. You learn the next daf, so you could forget the one before that. You learn the next one, you could forget the one before that. But then you reach the end. So now you have one daf which you're going to know. So that's why you have that segula. You make sure to say all those names, that'll help you forget that one too. That's the way most people learn. Most people walk out of the machon and they have a general picture. Yeah, I'm more connected. They have principles. They have concepts. But you ask them what they learned specifically, a year down the road, they barely even remember what classes they went to. And it's not just in the machon. It's that way in almost every yeshiva. And the main reason is that people don't review. The Gemara says a person who learns and doesn't review is like a person who plants and doesn't harvest. And the Gemara says the students know this rule, and they don't obey it, even though they know it. In the Gemara's time already, the Gemara said that. So a person should review, and review, like we said, could be right after you learn it, which is very, very worthwhile. I don't consider myself having learned something unless I review two or three times on the spot. I read a page of Gemara, I read it again. So sure, I read it already. I know what's coming up. No, I don't. The first time I was just figuring out how to put the words together. The second time I'm figuring out what Rashi meant in the Gemara. The third time I'm starting to understand the Gemara. So there's a review right away when you learn it. At the end of the day, it's very helpful if when you're trying to go to sleep, ask yourself, what did I do today? Another thing that's very helpful is when you finish learning, you're about to go out for lunch or whatever it is, stop 5 minutes earlier, pick up your head and ask yourselves, what did I do today? What did I just do the last hour or two? You'll be surprised. Very often you pick up your head and you're like, I don't remember. Try asking yourselves what topics you did. What was the outline of what you did? When you start doing that, you'll realize that you're focusing on understanding and not focusing on remembering. And once you get accustomed to asking yourself the question, it's a different type of focus. When a person knows that he's going to have to answer up to that, so his focus is different. And if you do it over a week and over a month, reviewing what you did in the beginning of that month, then you'll also train yourself to apply your long-term memory. I have a very poor memory. I could look up from a Gemara and say, okay, I'm going to get Shulchan Aruch, volume 1. I walk to the shelf, I forget what volume I'm going to get. I walk back to the Gemara, I look at it, walk back to the shelf, forgot again, walk back to the Gemara, look at it again, say, this time I'm writing it down. Write it down, go back to the shelf. Then I ask myself, okay, volume 1, that includes which topic? They have different printings of volume 1. This could happen to me 10 times a day. So I try to keep the books close to where I learned.
Focusing, though?
Could be it's a matter of focusing. Could be my head is still focused in the Gemara, or could be my head wanders the second I could allow it to wander. I you know, it's very tense to keep focused on a page. So you pick up your head. Wow, you cannot focus on something. It's a good feeling. But what happens is you lose everything. If you know that you're going to ask yourself, what did I just do? Let me outline that. So you'll force yourself, okay, let me look it over again. Let me skim it through. What did I just do? What were the conclusions? I saw this opinion, that opinion. Yeah, well, what was the conclusion? What did the Gemara say? Bottom line. You'd be surprised how many guys go through yeshiva 5-10 years and they don't know bottom lines. It's helpful to underline. Underline the bottom line in the Gemara. Put in question marks. Question marks, periods, commas. Help yourself. In the future, you'll erase it. Maybe do it in pencil. One of the things that a person should try to develop when he's here at the Machon are, just a second, Adam, could you pass this back to him? Okay. One of the things a person should try to develop in the Machon are long-term habits. And long-term habits, now I'm not talking about only the learning. One of them is obviously going to be the learning. And on this one, I think every person should decide for himself one thing that he's going to learn every day in his life. That he doesn't miss a day that he doesn't learn. Before you know it, you leave the machon, you go to college, you go to work, you get married, you have kids. Life overtakes a person. A person should always be learning. You should go to classes, you should try to go in the evenings, but you should also get into the habit to have a set time that you learn every day, even if it's 2 minutes. Obviously, you should aspire for more. But if you'll maintain 2 minutes every day, you decide every day I learn a little bit, 5 psukim from the parsha. Every day I learn a medrash on the parsha. Every day I learn 2 halachot. Doesn't matter what. You'll be a different person. You'll always be connected. Your kids will see that, they'll pick that up. Kids pick up the true you. Not what you say. Parents always say, do as I say, not as I do. Well, kids catch who you are, not what you say. So one of the things a person should develop here at the Machon are long-term habits. Get into the habit of having something small that you're learning. Get into the habit of how seriously you're going to take your learning. Guys very often come and complain. I want to learn, and my wife, she wants me to help. She wants me to go to the movies. She wants me to take out the garbage. She wants me to do the shopping. She wants me to take the kids out. Okay, when he learns, how many times does he answer the phone? When he learns, how many times does he get up and go take a coffee, take a drink, eat some cake? What message is he sending his wife about how important his learning is? If he'd come home and say, I have a class every week, I know a guy who, in his house, his learning, no one bothers him when he's learning. Why? Because he doesn't stop his learning for anything. He has a class he goes to every Friday morning. So everyone knows there could be a wedding, there could be anything. That class he's not missing. And because he's truthful, so everyone respects that. Long-term habits don't only include learning. They include how a person behaves, how a person speaks. People are very, very lackadaisical about what they say. The secular world puts down speech. In Judaism, we say speech is holy. A person has to make his speech holy. We stress that a person has to speak with respect to his elders, to his parents, to his grandparents. A person isn't supposed to curse. A person isn't supposed to shout. A person isn't supposed to be cynical. Now, these are all things that most people have habits, and the person should get good habits. Habits are things that we don't think about. It's how we behave. So a person should try to take the time he has at the Machon to perfect these things. You'll be a different person. You don't want your kids to curse. Well, if they hear you cursing, what do you expect? And the same thing is true with how people behave. You have parents telling their kids, don't touch that, that's not yours. Well, do they not touch what's not theirs? Unfortunately, today I see more and more people feel very free touching other people's things. This also applies to the Machon's things. There's a joke, they say, a guy was learning from a Gemara and he tore a page. So his friend said, what are you doing? That's my Gemara. So he said, oh, I'm sorry, I thought it was the Machon's. What does that mean? We're not allowed to harm the Machon's property or the Gemara or anything else. The Machon is an organization, but that doesn't allow us to steal from it. People feel like other people's money, right? You could do whatever you want with it. But the halacha expects us to behave differently. I personally feel that every person at the Machon should incorporate chesed into the day. And chesed is something that doesn't have to be planned. It could be helping out a friend. But I think there's what to be said for organized chesed as well. And guys have time off. And I personally think that guys should try to be part of an organization that helps people. And I don't care if that's an organization that distributes food for the poor or an organization that visits the sick. There's an organization that goes every Friday morning in the summer months and on Matzah Shabbos in the winter months. There are a lot of things. And people have to develop that caring. It could be going to a sick person and helping clean up the house. Doesn't matter what. But this is something people should get into the habit of doing. And it's, in my opinion, it's not enough just to be caring to your classmates. That there's a guy that's sick, of course, we have to get into the habit of bringing him food and asking him how he is and seeing what he needs. But But it's I think it's important to get used to being a part of organizations as well. Caring for others. Shutting the lights. How many times do guys leave classrooms and the lights are on? That costs them a ton of money. Again, this is a habit. It's a question of, is the person going to train himself to be in the habit of caring for other people's losing money? It's not going to cost me anything. No one's going to notice if I shut the light or not. But that's a habit a person should try to form. Calling one's parents. Obviously, it's going to take time. Sometimes it's going to cost money. Sometimes it's going to cost aggravation. But we owe it to them. So, again, I'm not talking about specifics, what each person has to deal with his parents and how and when and in what fashion. But in general, this has to be part of a person's plan. You're making a plan for a year, for the time you're going to be in the Mahon. Think of what things you want to acquire. So he said two big changes a person should take, and I consider waking up on time in the morning a big change. A person shouldn't do more than two, and I think it's perfectly fine if a person does one. Shouldn't do none. But a person shouldn't do more than two because I don't think people succeed with more than two. And on long-term habits, so that's just the question of getting used to it. I don't think these are big changes. Being a happy person. It's important. People sometimes think, if I'm learning and I'm serious, so that shows I'm learning. It doesn't work that way. It's worthwhile to go over to Merkaz Harav one day for prayer, just to see Rabbi Avraham Shapiro, just to see how he smiles at people. You could just learn from that. You're talking about a man who was chief rabbi of the state of Israel. And you see how he smiles, how he's a happy person. Rabbi Feinstein, I'd say nearly 50% of the times when I'd come to ask him a question, he'd throw me a joke. Seriously. Almost always he'd give a joke together with his answer. The halacha expects us to be happy people. And part of this is not being overly pressured. People sometimes feel like they have to finish. They have to finish the Masechet. They have to learn all day. They have to do X, Y, and Z. Our sages taught us the rule is, Lo alecha amlecha ligmor. You're not responsible for finishing. You don't have a right to say, I'm free, I don't have to do this. No, we all have to work, but we shouldn't be pressured. Now, on the one hand, we gain from being with people and there's an atmosphere here. We gain by osmosis. But on the other hand, we shouldn't be applying peer pressure. It's none of one's business if his roommate does things that you don't think are right. If you have a question, just ask a rabbi. I don't think it's right that people interfere in one another's lives. Even with good intentions. I'm a big believer in Dante.
Dante Alighieri?
The road to perdition is paved with good intentions, right? So I don't care about the intentions right now. People have to have the freedom to advance at their own pace, and no one could live feeling that someone's looking down their back. You have to give one another freedom. People will gain by osmosis, but peer pressure I don't think is positive. Now, there's one big, bad American habit, and I don't know how much it applies to the Europeans, but I don't. From what I see here, it doesn't. And that is sleep. Americans have late night shows. They never get to bed before midnight. I know there's a rabbi here who, on his answering machine, he says, call me between 11 and 12 o'clock at night. And tell me, is that normal? But it's a big, bad American habit. Learn from the Israelis. Israelis daven at 6. They get up early. On Shabbat, you won't find an 8:30 minyan around. The latest minyan, and that's a really late one, is 8:15. In the United States, the early minyan is 8:30. Oh, you found one. Okay. Say that. Chabad, no. Not Israeli. It's a bad habit. It's something to overcome. And you should know that your success in learning goes hand in hand with your ability to focus, and that goes hand in hand with your sleep. You should set yourself a bedtime and stick to it. Now, try to make it fun. All these charts, try to make it fun. Have a contest with yourself. There were once two roommates who used to have a contest. They each made a similar chart. And whoever didn't live up to his chart, the next day had to buy the other one either chocolate or ice cream. So you feel it in your wallet. They both gained, right? There are things I think every person should learn. You should each incorporate into your day and at some level or another. I'm not talking about more than 5 minutes on each one a day, but you decide how much. Every these are things I think every person should be learning every day, ideally, even after you leave the machon. One is a halacha sefer, either Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, learn it in English, or Chai Yodam, I don't care. But there should be a halacha sefer, which you're doing every day, in my opinion. You should try to incorporate that every day. Definitely when you're in the machon. The next thing is Torah. You could learn a little bit of the parsha. So you won't finish the parsha every week. But again, I have a friend who, he works with bookmarks, and I guess it works for him. When he stops, he reads the parsha to a certain point, he puts a bookmark. Next year, he knows that's how far he got. So next year, he'll start from there. Yeah. That's, I'm all for that. If you could live up to that, good. I'm thinking that I'm talking to you not only for your time at the Machon. So if I'm talking to you long term for the next 20 years, I'd rather see you take something you could live up to. During the time you're at the Machon, I also don't know if every person wants to learn the Parsha. You have a class here that summarizes the Parsha. I don't know if every person has the patience, if that's what attracts him. Obviously, whoever has the strength to do what you're saying, that's ideal. That's ideal if every day you do that section. That section of the parsha that stays reading. Every person should try to have a small time in his day that he learns a book of Musar. Some kind of book that helps us improve ourselves as people. And there are a lot of self-help books out there. And what I like isn't going to be what you like, and what one guy likes isn't going to be what his neighbor likes.
Like this, things like on Lashon Hara.
I don't care what. I don't care if it's Lashon Hara. I don't care if it's Ochot Tzadikim, the way of the just. I don't care if it's Mesilat Yesharim, the path of the righteous. I don't care if it's any of Rabbi Pliskin's books. I don't care. But a person should be moving forward in life. In life, if you're not going up, you're going down. And if a person is working on himself by reading some book, it should be a book you feel comfortable with. And you should know, even though a book was written by a great author, doesn't mean it's good for you. You have to find a book that you feel comfortable with. That the nature, that the style of the author fits you, and the translation fits you. And these I wouldn't read in Hebrew. I don't see a point in reading these in Hebrew. Here, I'm interested in you gaining the information. And I think it's good that a person should try to have 2 minutes a day where he reads either a history book or a book of Jewish facts. Broaden your horizons. You should know more. Should know what year was Avram born. You should know on the Jewish calendar that was 1948. Should know that. And there's nothing wrong with having the same book that you review a few times.
Of course.
One thing you should know is that growth is exponential. You're going to see over your time the machon, that's something you can't see now, that the amount you grow the first month, by the second month you're growing 5, 10, 15 times as much. You're not growing twice as much. The time you invest here, and that's why you should know that every day you invest is worth much more than just another day. And a day towards the end is worth more than a day in the beginning. Growth in Torah is exponential, and this keeps going. Let's put it this way. It hasn't stopped by me yet. So I don't know what's beyond, but where I am, it hasn't stopped. So I think it's fair to say that it keeps going. Enjoy it. And you'll enjoy it with time when you look back and see what you've accomplished. People measure themselves compared to their neighbor, compared to the other guy, compared to their own expectations, and that's not fair. A person has to measure himself compared to what he is capable of doing. A person has to see, did I take advantage of my time? Did I do my best? If I did my best, so that's what's expected of me. End of story. I don't know as much as he knows. Okay, what can I do? God, these are the tools you gave me. I'm doing the best I can with what you gave me. A person isn't sure where he's holding, you should ask a Rav. There are too many people who leave Yeshiva and Machon Meir. Also in Merkaz Rav we have this. They think, I'm not succeeding. Who said you're not succeeding? Many people feel like they're not succeeding, and many, many times they're wrong. Sometimes people don't notice and they really aren't succeeding and they have to do a switch in their lives. But very often people think they're not succeeding because they have a friend who's already in the next year in Gemara. They have a friend who already knows X, Y, and Z. So what? You can't measure yourself based upon your friend. You wouldn't measure your knowledge of astronomy based upon his knowledge. Maybe he has better eyes than you do. Maybe when he looks in the sky, he could see more because he sees more. We each have our strengths, we each have our weaknesses, and we could each grow in Torah. And we learned in Tehillim that King David speaks about uvetorato yege yomam v'layla, that a person toils in his own Torah day and night. Well, directly preceding that, King David describes the Torah as being God's Torah. Why does it become your Torah? Because if you work over it, it'll be your Torah. When a person toils over Torah, it becomes his. And every person has potential to say new Torah that no one else can say. We each have potential to discover things in the Torah that no one else will be able to discover. And we should write them down. Now, just because you think you've discovered something doesn't mean you did. Ask someone who knows more. But you have a thought, you see something in the parasha, write it down. Remember that enjoying the learning process is going to spur you on to learn more and retain more. You can't always do what you enjoy most, but try to make the learning an enjoyable process. And bottom line, at the end of the day, we need Hashem's help. No person succeeded in learning without praying to Hashem. So don't forget to include it in your prayers. We pray every day, Chaneinu mitchad de'abina v'askel. We ask God to give us knowledge. We need God's help. No one can succeed in learning without God's help. So remember it when you pray. Any questions? Okay, so let's take a 5-minute break and